This is a Beyond Cast Cerberus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCastCerberus.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Christian Corley. With me is Brian Terranova.
This guy.
Him there. And over there is James McLean.
Hello.
And this is the podcast with a K. We're talking Doctor Who because it is a podcast with a K, not one of those other podcasts that we do. Hashtag, obviously. So we've noticed in the... By the way, just to contextualise everything. Okay, it's Thursday evening. On the 8th of December, we've done some podcasts a few weeks ago altogether. We're going to do another one later on today. We're going to be looking at the Christmas invasion. Things get timey-wimey when we do two along next to each other. So if you're listening to one and then the other one and everything's out of sync or whatever, that's why. Okay? I've got that off my chest now. So did you know that Peter Capaldi says that he's not necessarily leaving Doctor Who after Series 10? Did you guys know about this?
You're asking us or the listeners?
Whoever. You two can answer. Listener can't necessarily.
Okay, yeah. Well, I didn't know if we were waiting for that Sesame Street kind of response or anything. But yeah, I've heard this.
Oh, I should have. Oh, I wish I had. Do carry on, sorry.
Did you know that? Yes, I know that you did. What is that, Mr. Rogers? There you go.
Oh, sorry. Oh, you've got, it's killed me that. Sorry, I'm not sure what's going on at all. This is what Capaldi says anyway, that it's his choice, which is kind of conflicts with what I've heard in terms of Series 11, but it doesn't conflict with what I've heard in terms of the Christmas special in 2017, which may be what he's referring to. What do you guys think?
Oh, yeah. I think it's been like Doctor Who for the past several years has been like a big spinster campaign, you know, what people can and can't say or how they have to be careful not to tread on future work and things like that. So I think it's very likely what you just described there, that it could simply be for that Christmas special.
That sounds like general life these days.
Yeah.
People treading very carefully. And then there's the other people who don't.
You just got to be careful. It's your job. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Peter Capaldi says, I've been asked to stay on, and I haven't made my mind up about that yet, mainly because I don't want to have to make that decision. I'm trying to avoid it. That's what he says. So, you can see, I think you're right.
I was just going to say, he's probably going through what Tennant and Smith both said when they left. Like, they know they probably should leave and go do other things, but it's a tough job to leave because they enjoy it. You know? Well, I mean, who knows? That's at least one way to interpret it.
I agree. I've read that from a website. I was going to look at the comments, and I've looked at the comments. I thought, oh, they're interesting comments, but really, they're pretty much just saying what you've just said.
So you feel that people are generally feeling the same, that it's nothing that you'd either feel comforted or confused about. It's just one of those sort of press things.
Well, you know, do you remember the Tennant thing, right? Everyone was like, because it was done live as well, wasn't it? And although I say it was done live, and it was done ostensibly live, but I remember either reading or dreaming that I read an account of a girl watching the announcements about 2 weeks before it was recorded, 2 weeks before it was broadcast. So when I sat down to watch it that evening, and I saw the announcement with the two Romans, or whatever they were, stood either side of him, I knew he was announcing that he was quitting Doctor Who, because I'd either read or dreamt that I'd read this account of it happening by a girl who, 2 weeks ago, when she's... Oh, it was just weird. It played with my mind for weeks. I don't mind saying. Really, it was almost as bad as the time I went down the Paulie's Dead rabbit hole. It was almost
This has been 3 minutes where we've listened to you recant a story that's not even maybe even anecdotal, but it's maybe just absolutely nothing, something you dreamed about.
Try living it, proverbial arsehole.
Those are tough words.
They are, but you said them, so...
You know, I think there's one thing to consider here. Was that when you said, like, the comments basically were saying what I had already covered, essentially. Yeah. I've noticed, speaking with a lot of fans over the years, when news like this comes around or the big decisions or big changes in the show come around, you, myself, James, and a couple other people that we know here through the podcast and so on, get certain information, whether it's true or not, or exaggerated or not. We our impressions are based upon this information, and you know, we have thoughts of why things may be said by certain people and feel that we're justified in that. But it seems like most of the population, like watching the show, just sit there and go, oh, he doesn't know if he's gonna stay or go, and that's all they know, because they don't really know the other things that we hear. And sometimes those things that we hear turn out to definitely be true. Sometimes they turn out to be an exaggeration. Sometimes they turn out to be a twisted little thing. And sometimes, who knows? But it's easy for me to, like, sit here and think that poor Capaldi is getting the boot, not being allowed to come back for various reasons, because, you know, the BBC's got their facts wrong about what's wrong with the show, essentially. And it could be very simply, you know, that's not the case. But it doesn't seem like that many fans are going to be leaning that way, thinking that way, because they're not hearing the stories that we get to hear, you know? Hmm. So it's like, I wonder how many of those comments on those sites are ever going to reflect anything like what we're thinking, just as a general opinion by somebody who thinks that may be the case, rather than having it some kind of insider knowledge. So when he says he's not trying to think about it, people are probably just sitting there hopeful that he's going to stick around, or has he worked this job too long? Going back to even what Troughton told Davidson so long ago, you know, do 3 years, get out. You know, like, you're going to ruin your career if you hang in there too long, essentially. You know, you'd be typecast. You know, that's what most people probably will lean to and look at first, rather than anything else.
Yeah. I think when you're at Capaldi's age, and after having already done, like, a particularly popular character, I should think typecasting's less on his mind. But yeah, I do generally agree with what you said. And ultimately, it's not down to him. As I understand it, the BBC want Doctor Who to be 2005 to 2010 Doctor Who. They want all the energy back. They want all that madness back. And they want a young, good-looking Doctor. No disrespect to Peter Capaldi, he's not the young. He's not young. He's a handsome chap, but I don't think he's the good looking that they're looking for. So we shall see how it turns out. Listen, go on.
I was just going to say, I still think there's a lot of generating clickbaits through this. I mean, we've seen over the last couple of months how important these sort of media bubbles are to sort of promoting and spreading quick, fast news that keeps products within the limelight. And I think this could be even just one of those where, as you say, it's probably to do with the next Christmas special, but it's tempered a little to make a nice little conversation piece for tabloids and social media just before the Christmas special.
Yes. Probably. Well, the thing these days, of course, is that there are so many websites.
Yeah.
And so many kind of what we would have called 20 years ago cult websites. Mm. Or even 10 years ago, really. Possibly even 5 years ago. But there is a lot of it. There is a lot of cult bandwidth on the internet at the moment. And, you know, I use Google Now on my phone. So it finds things that I'm interested in that I've searched on Google for. And I'll see things about Doctor Who or Star Wars or whatever from sites I've never even heard of. Never visited, but they're suggested to me because I've previously shown an interest in Star Wars or Doctor Who or whatever. And, you know, there's all these, so many sites, and they are, I have to say, and I didn't intentionally mean to go this way with this, but they are, unfortunately, the vast majority of them, absolutely loaded with adverts, like a certain website we used to know.
Mm.
So Brian won't know this because Brian isn't a listener of the podcast with a K. He isn't the listener. That's you. And so Brian won't know that James and I had a brief chat about Casterbris last week. Because I was looking on archive.org, Brian, at how Casterbris looked like 10 years ago or whatever. As I said to James at the time, one of the reasons things changed because we were trying to do news to keep up with everyone else to stay relevant, and that's when the adverts started coming in to sort of like pay for the hosting that we needed to handle the expansion with doing the news and then more visitors that come along. And it's like a snowball. It's not a vicious circle. It's more like a vicious mountain that, you know, you need more of one, then you get more of the other, then you have to pay more for the next. And it kind of catches you in a crazy spin of madness.
Mm. You know, it gets tiring too, because I've been looking up sites about, you know, Marvel movies and other interests right now. And, Marvel movies is a good point right now because the Spider-Man trailer is coming to us today after that teaser trailer. But with that, the actors are doing certain news rounds. And so websites are posting things like, this actor's character is now confirmed. And so I click that to try and read it. And number one, like you said, it's clickbait. And I can hardly even read two sentences before the site is redirected to another irrelevant site automatically. And then you can't even stop that. You can't click back out of that. You have to close the thing and try and open it again. And it's like, after a while, you sit there and go, I don't need to read this. So you just close it and forget about even trying to read their article. But when you do try to get their article, it's like they write, I don't know, it's like 5-6 paragraphs worth of information, where the first 5 paragraphs are all just, well, so you guys watch Marvel movies and you all know about Spider-Man. Here's this thing. And let me tell you what Marvel movies have done in the past. And you can just skip all that BS, get to the last paragraph where it goes, this is who the actor's playing. And it's like there's too many sites all reporting news of nothing, because there's nothing to report.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's done it already. You know, and it's getting boring. That's why, for me, anyway, certainly the podcast way is much more fun, what we're doing, because it's a conversation, it's opinion. It's not like, here's this thing we're trying to report that you probably already know about, but I'm going to make you read, you know, 10 pages worth of information before you get to that point you probably already know. And not to downplay them, some sites do some nice stuff, obviously. So I'm not trying to say anything bad about websites or even anything that we did in the past. But it's just a shame. It's really a lot of oversaturation, for sure, and too much fluff, not enough content. To join your conversation from last podcast that I wasn't there for.
Fine. No, it's nice. It's a shame we couldn't have just shame we didn't know we were going to have this conversation. Then we could have, or I could have edited it into last week's podcast.
No worries. You know, there's another point though. Real quick to Capaldi. Just sitting here, even contemplating him saying he's not sure whether he's going to stay or go, it kind of tells you that, you know, the end of series 10 either is uncertain, they haven't filmed the proper ending for it yet, or it for sure is just going to have a proper series finale for that season. And then the Christmas special is just, am I going to leave at the end of that or not? You know, like, so it is a shame in some way, because with the way the news is non-news anymore, because everybody knows it, because it leaks every which way, you know, and you're just never going to avoid it. You're never going to get a story where the Doctor regenerates that's actually going to shock us, where we're going to sit there and go, wow, I didn't see that coming. I didn't know he was leaving.
Yeah.
You know, because they have to make big news about it.
Onslaught of news.
Hmm.
It's essentially what it is. It is essentially what it is.
Well, to be fair, that has always been the case. There's never been a surprise regeneration.
We nearly had one, didn't we? But no, you're right, there hasn't been.
Yeah, that would have been great if that worked, but no, we haven't.
Which is,
although I suppose, like, did we talked about this before. Did it work for Troughton, Hartnell and the Troughton, or did they actually announce that Hartnell was leaving even way back when?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was announced. I mean, certainly the Radio Times sort of say there is a new doctor for the Power of the Daleks, don't they? I think it says in there, and the doctor is I'm sure there is something in the listing that sort of suggests, but it's not made a big deal in the listing, I must admit. It is something like the doctor has changed and the Daleks have appeared or something. It's more focused on the Daleks.
Sure.
It's actually about the actual... Wish I could find that clipping, actually. It's quite an interesting one. Somewhere lost in Facebook. You know, this is what I really hate about Facebook, is it is so much of the moment. It's really hard to find stuff that you've seen or you quite found quite interesting that is now lost, buried under mountains of posts. I don't like that. Let's have a look. Just maybe I'll find. I have a horrible feeling it was on Gareth Cavanagh's feed, which means the chances of finding it, given how much he posts, is going to be probably next to none. He is a busy social media man.
Okay, listen, we were talking about a certain BBC Three show last time we all got together, and it's now finished. And I was absolutely, what's the word? I can't actually explain how surprised I was to see that it's actually supposed to be going on to BBC One of all channels. I'm talking about Class, the supposedly young adult series filled with sex, blood, and some very naughty words, according to our friends at the Doctor Who Companion. So yeah, it's actually supposed to be on BBC One. BBC sources said that it will be airing after the 10 p.m. news at 10:45 p.m. on a weekday slot. I can't see Class on BBC One. I'd be surprised if they got it after midnight on BBC Two. I've got to be honest.
I suppose it's a schedule filler, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm very surprised that it's going to be on TV. I really am. I've commented on the article, actually, saying that I think you'll be lucky to get late night BBC Two screening, and that BBC One shouldn't touch you with a barge pole. Perhaps a BBC Four retrospective in 10 years' time. But you know what we were talking about last time, you know, on this particular topic, I've been thinking, and it would be better if it was aimed at a wider audience, not necessarily children, but perhaps that. Just genuine adults beyond the mythical young adult audience. Does young adult really exist? Because it didn't exist. It didn't exist 20 years ago when we were all reading. Well, I say all of us. James and I. I know. Brian wasn't reading Doctor Who Young Adventures from Virgin, which were pretty much the exact definition of young adult books. There was no YA genre then. So I always feel as though by focusing into niches, not just TV but everything in society, in order to make everything inclusive, makes things exclusive and excludes people that should be included. And it all just seems to be a crazy way of doing stuff when we could all just sit there and enjoy things. I've been I know it's me, I'm going on a rant here, but I follow the Sitcom Geek Twitter account, James Carey, and read the blog, and I've got the book as well, called Writing That Sitcom. And basically, it's very clear that the most popular sitcoms aren't the ones that run BBC Three or BBC Two. They're not the ones that are filmed on camera without a laughter track. They're the ones with the laughter tracks. Whether or not you find those shows funny or not, they are the ones with the laughter tracks, filmed in front of a studio audience, filmed on a standard video camera in a studio. And I always see... Maybe, you know, Doctor Who's going towards we would be led to believe, from, you know, the mythical Chibnall sweeping brush, Doctor Who's going toward pushing back towards the way it was as a more inclusive general show.
But this, I think, is largely to do with American influences, because in America, since the 90s, television started to shift from being that sort of broad audience focus down to this sort of narrow audience focus, which, you know, Fox largely kicked off with its sort of schedules with things like the X-Files, as I think we've said before. So you get this idea of seeing that, right, it is advantageous if we focus on specific audiences that we can therefore get specific products, you know, in ad breaks and everything that promote to these audiences who will follow this show. And so you get this sort of narrowing. But I know kind of what you mean so far in the British model. I don't think, especially with the BBC, where you don't have that sort of requirement through advertising, you don't have that sort of that sort of market that you're having to decide whether you go broad or you go thin. Hmm. I don't know whether it quite works in the same way. Class. I don't know. Class, just as we've said before, doesn't work for me on so many levels. Primarily because even if you take away that issue, it's still working on a sort of genre model which is now over 15 years old. You know, the Buffy thing cycle had sort of long since extinguished itself, and it's sort of almost trying to reinvigorate itself on the basis that it is self-aware that it's doing that. It's like, that doesn't make any difference to me. I've still seen all this before. Even if you're aware and you make lots of comments to make sure that we're aware that you're aware, that everyone's aware that this has been done before, it's not really helping. So, yeah, it's a funny one.
Go on.
I was going to say, does Brian have anything to add? Because I did just make large generalizations about sort of American model of television broadcasting.
I couldn't even tell you what American television broadcasting is like right now. I don't watch TV as it airs.
You must remember in the 90s where there was that sort of shift where there, you know, people like Fox and it started realizing, hey, you know, maybe if we market to specific audiences, we can find our niche within all these big networks that we're having to sort of almost try and destabilize to get a foothold in there.
Sure.
So you get things like the X-Files, which probably wouldn't have existed in the same way 5 years before. Certainly not on the other, networks, maybe.
Yeah, well, things like the X-Files paved the way for shows like it as well. And things like Buffy and so on were definitely geared toward... It's different now where you can make a superhero movie, superhero TV show, science fiction TV show or science fiction movie, and it's broad spectrum. And all of a sudden, everybody is into it. Whereas in the 90s, they were gearing things at us, at the younger groups, at even like something like Buffy. And I know that this has a very broad audience, so this is just a general breakdown here. But it definitely was geared toward female audiences. You know, here's a female hero and lots of strong female characters and the love triangles of the show and stuff like that. It was basically a good old fashioned drama with some action kind of horror sci-fi aspect to it.
It was mocking that sort of after school special thing again, but at the same time, if you think back to the 90s, sorry, to the 80s, and you look at the shows then, everything was sort of played from the broadcaster's point of view on a sort of broad way. I mean, if you take things like Knight Rider or shows which were sort of aimed at those four action shows, they all were sort of very broad on that basis that there was a certain dilution to them, that they had to carry all those basic elements to sort of be popular. But when you get to things like X-Files, and as you say with Buffy, you're getting things where it's almost like saying, we don't have to be popular, we just have to do this in the way we want to do it. There's sort of, you sort of get away, you feel with the X-Files and certainly with Buffy as well, this sort of feeling that you don't have to capitulate to trying to tap every audience. You just got to tap a audience really well, and then if it does really well, then that audience will expand. I was wondering with that, and so maybe, I don't know, maybe we're going off track here.
I am kind of curious, though, going back to Class real quick. I agree with you. Like, I mean, if you look at something like Knight Rider, that was definitely directed toward a very specific audience, the A-Team and so on, you know, and then shows
but it's,
today.
But it's specific but broad. It's in a way that it was in a sort of position where it wouldn't shock anyone. It wouldn't horrify anyone. It was that sort there was a sort of family agenda to it that anyone could watch it and it wouldn't turn them away. And it just had to be a little better than what was on the other side. But, you know, get to the 90s and you'd get the Fox doing stuff, which that, you know, X-Files would turn people away. People would be disgusted about it. People might find it too scary. People, all these things you'd imagine execs in the 80s going, we're not going to touch this. because people aren't going to watch something which has got horror in it, and some people aren't going to watch something which hasn't got laughs in it, where there isn't, you know, some fun kid or something for the, you know, for the children, or something for the, you know, the car for the children with its lots of buttons, yeah, or something. You know, there's a shift there.
Yeah, it, which actually brings me nicely to the point I was just going to make, or the question I was going to put to you guys more so. With Class coming to BBC One, because if we all remember, you know, Class follows a kind of Torchwood kind of element of the adult aspects of the TV show, and that was put on BBC Three. Do you think that Class will be edited in some way for a BBC One broadcast?
Could be.
Because I wonder if somebody sees the potential in Class to be that kind of proper Doctor Who spinoff, the one we've been deserved for years, not the one that's been dumbed down for kids, not the one that's been made adult in the wrong aspects to appeal more to grown-ups. And maybe they're thinking, well, if we cut this out, this and remove that, and maybe change some dialogue here or there, perhaps, who knows, maybe they feel that this could be a viable show that could interest a more mass audience.
But it's not massively violent or horrific from what I saw. So I mean, I'd have thought
it's
a lot
not the violent or the horrific, from what I saw going from one episode alone, so I don't know if the whole series was this way, but the over-sexualized angle of things again.
It depends, I think, when they'd air it, doesn't it? I think that would probably be the question. But it does strike me as just simply they've got this show that they've made for BBC Three, which is pretty much a non-entity now, as they knew it would be. And it's just like, well, why don't we use it? You know, I suppose that's probably the sort of feel behind it. Why not? If it's done okay for BBC Three, maybe it'll do okay for BBC One, probably.
I'm going to just say, the offspring of Sergei Eisenstein and Alfred Hitchcock could not edit Class into a better show.
No, I'm not going to argue that fact, but, you know, TV execs all think they know what's best. Mm. And so if they think there's something... Like, I'll put it to you this way. Torchwood was able to pull things together for Series 3, Children of Earth, and make us all go, wow, that's what Torchwood should have been. Somebody saw, and I know it's Russell in charge, but somebody saw what the show could have been, made it what it could have been.
Yeah.
And the best, the logic there is basically, okay, Season 1 of Class is what it was. With Season 2, let's fix the things that were broken. And that's what you do with any TV show. Once you do a Season 1, once you get in Season 2, you go, these are the things that worked. These are the things that didn't work. Let's fix those things. Let's change our focus and get on track. Some people, unfortunately, probably think that there's something salvageable in that that first season and may want to just think that they could fix it with editing. Another example, Star Wars, the first ever Star Wars film ever. George Lucas saw a cut of the film that was laughable, apparently. Everybody just thought it was awful. Lucas thought that there was something there, so he took it upon himself to hire new editors and himself to sit there for hours and re-edit the movie into this film that we all know and love.
Wasn't that the one with all the movie clips put in, though? Is that what everyone... Wasn't that
no.
edit?
Oh, no, right, no, no. It was a more linear kind of storytelling that they have done, and it slowed the pace. Nobody knows what it really looked like. We're only told about
I think there were some shots, either they've either tried to reconstruct what it was like, but it was essentially things like scenes hung longer than they did, so they just realized if they sort of chopped, if they did snappier cuts.
Right. Oh, so is this where we lost Jabba the Hutt and Biggs?
No. It's like, for instance, I think examples like the Cantina scene. If you take the sort of thing with Obi-Wan Kenobi slicing the guy's arm off, I think in the original, those sort of moments played just a little longer, and they just realized if they started to make those cuts in those sequences, just in the editing of that scene, for example, a little faster, so you moved, everything moved at a little more of a pace, nothing hung on anything, which if you think of Star Wars, it doesn't really. The direction is sort of very much, the editing is very much that, you know, you don't really hold on anything, it sort of moves quite quickly. I think that's what they were doing. They went for a sort of different sort of pace in the edit, which just made the thing move faster and it didn't feel so flabby.
Right.
You know, so I think those were the things that they did. And there's that slightly different style of editing that, as Brian says, they brought it.
Okay.
They brought in.
Just for the listeners.
I just gave it.
So for the listeners' benefit, what I was alluding to is that they used dogfight scenes from war movies for the space scenes before they've done the models, before they've done the model shots, haven't they? That's what I was alluding to.
Said that that was better than storyboarding for those particular things to understand what was going on to edit those scenes. But, and I'm not saying this is the case with Class. I'm wondering, just knowing that it was originally thought that Torchwood would not be suitable for BBC One, if Class may somehow fall in that same line. And Christian, you've seen more Class than I have, because I saw the first episode and decided it wasn't a show for me.
I'm up to episode 6, and I pretty much stand by what I said previously. The only interesting characters are the teacher and the footballer. The rest rest of them are generally a bunch of whinging people. The prince the alien prince remains completely ineffectual. His boyfriend does more, quite frankly, and so it does seem to be kind of hamstrung.
Did you see this on a similar topic? There was an interview, and I can't remember where I saw it, which is why I can't even relate to where it was done. It was conducted, and I can't even, because I can't remember where it's done, I can't even verify the details it gave. But it was an interview with on the Sarah Jane Adventures, about the idea of the thought of them continuing it on after Liz Sladen passed away, and that sort of conversation. Did you catch that? It was this week.
No, I didn't see that.
And it was sort of, it might have been Collinson. I can't remember. Oh, isn't that terrible? But it was basically this idea of, you know, that they'd got up there. The BBC, CBC was very keen to carry the show on. Yeah. This was prior, before Sladen announced to the crew that there was a problem. And they'd got several seasons lined up ahead, to move on ahead. And at that point, I think it might have been on Den of Geek, I'll check in a sec. And it was at this point that when she sort of said, you know, I'm very ill, and I'm not, it's probably going to happen very quickly. And they had to decide. And there was a momentary decision, is could it carry on without her? And they look back retrospectively. And I think they're saying Davis at one point was thinking, oh my God, did we just kill it off too early? Because we were in a sort of feeling of that sort of grief, and feeling we just couldn't go on and do any more without her. But I thought that was a kind of interesting thing, because someone said it in the comments, you know, they could have done it like the Sarah Jane legacy and carried it on without her, but sort of had her legacy inform it, and perhaps brought someone else in. Like someone suggested that, you know, maybe Ace or something could have, and whether that would have worked. And again, it's just interesting, because again, these are sort of things that you'd have had on BBC One. These spin-off shows would have had a different life, or potential life.
I think, isn't that where the monsters and, was it Monsters and Aliens?
Yeah.
Is that what it was called? Isn't that where that came along? I mean, that was essentially the same team, wasn't it?
Yeah, there, I found it. It was Den of Geek. Yeah, so I'll send it for the show notes.
Okay. Wizards versus Aliens is what I'm thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, it's Brian Minchin and Russell T. Davis opted. And so it's Minchin talking about this idea that, you know, could they have carried it on, or should they have carried it on and done something different. But I thought, again, it's just quite interesting, because at that moment you think, where would that have gone if they had carried it on? I think that could have been quite an interesting thing, the Sarah Jane legacy. I can understand why they didn't. But... you know, if they had got people like sort of Sophie Elder involved, who, and that sort of thing would be quite interesting, you know, have it as a legacy, almost like a companion legacy, where it becomes a companion chronicles, which is in the name of Sarah Jane since she started it. And then you'd perpetuate it on with sort of maybe different companions coming in to take the role of looking after these, you know, helping these kids. You know, that's quite interesting. Clearly. Interestingly enough, just going back to what you said previously on the Power of the Daleks, I did find that little clipping. And yes, the clipping for Power of the Daleks is on the BBC, in the Radio Times, events move too fast for the TARDIS travellers to puzzle long over the apparent change in Doctor Who. For in today's episode, they meet the greatest and most instructable enemies, the Daleks. And it just talks about the Daleks. That's it. So the fact that regeneration is really quite glossed over.
Yeah.
And it moves on. And the headline of that article is "The Daleks Are Back." not that we've got a brand new actor playing the Doctor.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So, you know, going back to the whole thing about regeneration and its importance or its shock, clearly then it just didn't have this idea that it was important particularly, which I think is fairly interesting.
Okay, we'll just talk about one more thing, and then we'll wrap this week's podcast up, and we'll prepare ourselves for another podcast while you go about your business, to listener. And it's my favouritest, most favourite singer, song and dance man in the world, John Barrowman, has been someone's let him out of his crypt. This week, and he's been off. He was on Loose Women yesterday afternoon, so I forced Kerry to turn the TV off.
That's not his style at all.
I see what you did there.
I'm sorry, it was there. He would appreciate that.
And he's apparently been having a meeting at the BBC. According to his Instagram account, he. There's a photo of him with his agent, Gavin Barg, who wears a fetching, very butch scarf, telling his followers that he's going in for meetings at the BBC. And behind him, there is a police box. Now, he doesn't say which BBC he's going to. He could be at BBC Glasgow. He could be at BBC Kent. BBC Solent. He could be anywhere. I expect we're supposed to take from this that he's at BBC in London or in Cardiff, but it doesn't say. He could be bloody anywhere.
I got to say, the cropping of that photo makes it very obvious he wanted the TARDIS in that picture.
Oh,
his own chin out of the photo for that picture says a lot.
I don't know which one you're looking at. I'm seeing one with his chin, but there's very much he's in the bottom half of the photo, and the top half of the photo's the police box. So,
yeah, well, it's him, and it looks like somebody else with grey hair. I don't know who
this
that is.
This is his agent, Gavin Barker. Gavin there Barker Associates Fingers. No, Gavin Barker Associates. Sorry, got that wrong. It's bad punctuation on Instagram. So yeah, but no, you're absolutely right. He really wants us to see the police box, doesn't he?
That's what it looks like, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a secret little message there.
It's very secret, isn't it?
Very secret. I mean, it's tough to decipher that code. Is the thing.
Yeah,
just...
yeah. We'll need... We'll
could
need,
also be trolling us, as the internet likes to
Barrowman?
Do. Never. Never!
So, what's that? What's that all about? Torchwood? Maybe he's going to be in class. Maybe he's the new teacher in class. Series 2 class with Captain Jack. Hey. They get a few more viewers, put it that way.
Well, maybe that is the route they would want to go down. In a sense, one thing that class does bring is it does sort of pull things back to that sort of era of the sort of popular spin-offs and, you know, the sort of fun, more sort of kid-focused, perhaps, Doctor Who. And maybe that's what they're thinking. You know, maybe that's why class is having this shift to BBC One, that reinvigoration, get it away from the sort of Moffat era, despite it being a Moffat show.
I agree with you. I'm just looking at this on the Doctor Who Companion. At the top, there's a picture of Jack from Children of Earth, I think it is. A Barrowman from Children of Earth, who looks like John Barrowman, but, you know, it was like 2009, wasn't it? Or 2008, so it's like 7 or 8 years old. And there's a picture of him, this Instagram picture, and he's looking more like John Travolta. Now, compared to how he looked back in Children of Earth, that's a very strange metamorphosis he's taken on board. He could almost be John Travolta. He could double for John Travolta, I'm telling you now.
Do you have a problem with that photo, Brian? That lack of lamp on the police box really bugs me. I want to draw it on or something, or put something there. That just really upsets me.
It's kind of funny. Where are you guys looking? Because I'm on the Instagram and I can't see the top of the box or Barrowman's chin.
Oh, there we go.
Well, here's a link.
Yeah. But it's obvious this is the reason why the police box in the show was of a certain height, because then you wouldn't have to remove the bloody light.
Let's see. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go. That is, it looks so wrong. That's amazing how wrong it looks without the light. I mean, I know like they should be there in general, but the top of the box just looks so flat without the light.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
Weird.
I think what I always hate about that box in particular is it is just like brand, isn't it? It's just, you couldn't get a sort of shape and such over accentuated features on a prop that could be so obviously branded. I mean, it's, you know, the thick windows, the black to the white panels on the windows, that very square shape. It is just like a branded logo in real form. There's no subtlety to it whatsoever. Sorry, but it's just looking at that there.
It's very pared down, basic.
Yeah. It's almost like a cartoon in the background and a cartoon in the foreground.
There you go. Yes. So that's John Barrowman. And so if you've any thoughts on anything that we've discussed in this week's podcast with a K, tell us in the comments below or tweeters or Facebookers, and please I'll get my down on my, I will prostrate myself, please leave us a review on iTunes. That'd be lovely. That'd be, make my Christmas. It really would. The Doctor Who Christmas special is airing at 5:45 on Christmas Day. If you don't hear from us before then, we very much hope that you enjoy it. We'll be back with a commentary next week. Until then, it's goodbye.